Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I don't even know what's happening at the World Series. Joe Ostrowski with Esports Radio 670, The Score. So there's a bunch of people in the outfield. I don't have the audio on, obviously, because I'm doing this radio show. I just know that I saw someone throw what I think was the first pitch to somebody else, maybe a husband or a friend. I don't know what's happening. This is strange. It's a World Series. See, they don't know what to do at Fox. Like, they're so confused. Like, every few seconds, we're used to zooming in on stressed-out baseball fans that are crying and holding their breath with every last pitch. Like, they don't know what to do. How do we get people involved? I don't know. Have them go on the field before the game. Okay. Throw first pitch over there. We'll show that. Wonderful. Joe Osho, Sports Radio 670. The Score. Hope you enjoyed our conversation with Sean Zarillo. Do stuff like that every single day. Some people that have, like, an analytics background just look at games a little bit differently. And not all of them are like that. But I think Sean brings a lot of numbers and a lot of research to the table, and he's holding on to a Rays future just like myself. Not a massive ticket, but 15-1 is not bad before the season got started, so I know he's a Rays fan, and I think the Rays can take game one. Be fascinating to see what happens here with Clayton Kershaw in the World Series. Get that monkey off his back. He needs to start winning in the playoffs, unlike his last outing, and of course start playing well in the World Series. So been talking a lot about the Bears here, your 5-1 Bears. And I thought this was interesting because, well, the biggest narrative is about the offense, and it should be. We're in year three of Matt Nagy. He got his quarterback now. They've had time to fix the offense. Problem is, they haven't used a lot of their draft capital on the offensive line to fix that. But you have Allen Robinson. You've drafted multiple receivers. You drafted a tight end very high this past year, and you bring in a free agent. Tight ends aren't great, but they're much better than what they were a year ago. Now, what we're probably not spending enough time talking about, because we take the unit for granted, is the defensive side of the ball. And how good are they? 2018, elite level, no questions asked. But where are they now? The expected regression in 2019 happens, and the record goes from 12-4 down to 8-8. But now they could easily go 12-4. I'm not predicting it, but it's certainly possible. They only lose three more regular season games the rest of the way. Are they going to stay that healthy? That's a big concern. But Adam Jones broke this down. At this point in the season, in 2018, was the defense better? Most people would tell you yes, because they see the 12-4 record at the end of the season. And we were talking about it from week to week. That was the number one storyline that year. Not only the Bears winning games in Matt Nagy's rookie campaign as head coach, but also how dominant they were, and he just got Khalil Mack here. So that was the story. This year, it's more about fixing the offense. But is the defense back to 2018 in some ways. You could make the case that it is. Let's start with the takeaways. Get that out of the way. Takeaways, not even close. Nope. They had 17 through six games in 2018. 17. They have 8 this year. That's close to middle of the pack. Not bad at all, but it's not 17. The amount of game-changing moments that they had in 2018 via the turnover. Here are some statistical categories where the Bears' 2020 defense is better through six games than they were in 2018. And it's worth bringing up. Pretty interesting. Points allowed per game. 19.3 this year. Good for 7th in the NFL. They were 22nd in the NFL in 2018. Net passing yards per game. 224. That's good for 10th. Better than 2 years ago. Third down defense. Unreal, man. 31.8%. That is second best in the league. Passer rating by opposing quarterbacks. It is 73.5. 2018, it was 89. Red zone defense. Here's something that I'm going to keep a close eye on. The red zone defense. It's been phenomenal. Can't argue that. Best in the NFL so far. Can you continue to repeat that? Because typically what happens is at some point during the season, that's going to normalize a little bit. Now, maybe they can go the whole year playing to this level. Maybe. But that's a big ask. If you're asking them to be the number one red zone defense for the rest of the 2020 season, that's a huge ask. That's significant. To find numerous categories that show you after six games, the defense this year is better than that 28 defense. The main reason that team was 12-4. I kind of laughed last year because the majority of the 8 victories the Bears picked up were against very weak, if not second or third string quarterbacks. It was actually kind of a joke when you sit back and look at it. Like, oh, they're just beating up on these bad teams with bad quarterbacks. Played the Lions twice in 3 weeks, and they didn't even face Matthew Stafford. There were a lot of situations like that. At the end of the season, that Vikings game. Was that Sean Mannion? Is he still even in the league right now?
Who?
Now, they haven't faced a ton of elite quarterbacks this year. But they're good enough. They're quarterbacks that win games. So that's something else that's pretty interesting with this Bears defense. You face Stafford, Ryan. Rivers is probably toast, but he's serviceable on some weeks. He's not bottom five, bottom 10 right now. Maybe he will be at the end of the season. I don't think right now he is. They put up a good amount of points last week against the Bengals. Stafford, Ryan, Rivers, Brady, Bridgewater. Bridgewater had his worst game of the season by far this past Sunday. Is that a random event? Or are we going to give some credit to the Bears defense? I don't think it's all that random. Now, he'll probably bounce back and look good in a division game against New Orleans. You know, the Saints don't have a defense. I don't think that's going to be a random event if that happens. If they hang around in that game or even pull the outright upset and they are 7.5-point underdogs in that one. In part because of how bad they looked against the Bears. The number one pass defense in the NFL. So I know we're obsessed about the scoring. And it has to be better. They will not have 5-1 stretches going the rest of the way unless they start to score more points. Mm-mm. But the defense is carrying the team, and they're doing enough to get by for now. They're going to have to do more on offense if they want to win games as the schedule gets much more tougher. Let's also point out that coming up, the next few weeks will be rough, but before the season started, when you see the Vikings on the schedule, Big game, division matchup. That's going to be a tough one. Does it look tough right now? It changes so quickly in the NFL. Arizona Cardinals, I believe that was week one when they took down San Francisco. It was an amazing moment. Look at Kyler Murray. What if he can be the MVP? Continue the run of year two quarterbacks that accomplished that. And now you look back, yeah, they were healthier, but was that a great win? They're a 500 team. Flipped so quickly. For the year, Vikings, it's a big game because they're in the division, but they're not going to be in the playoffs this year. They have no defense. They got housed by the Falcons this weekend. Everything was going wrong for them coming into the season, and it's continued going into the year. They are brutal, man. Brutal. I don't know if that's going to turn around either. I hope they finish in last place because I put a bet in for the Minnesota Vikings to finish in last place. And they were the favorite to win the NFC North. Let me remind you of that fact. It was close between the Vikings and Packers, but a lot of sports books had the Vikings as the favorite to win the NFC North. And that happens every single year. We're talking about these teams that have these high expectations. Oh, how'd they end up in last place? Happens every single year. 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. This is Joe Ostrowski with you on Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm here till 10 o'clock. We'll check in with Brad Spielberger from Pro Football Focus. Big Bears guy, focuses on the Bears. I want to get his thoughts on the 5-1 Bears. He's going to drop by at 8 o'clock. And coming up next, we'll hear from Sage Rosenfels. He dropped by the Dan Bernstein Show. A few interesting things to say after he studied the film. And what he saw with Nick Foles and their win over the Panthers. We'll get to that next. This is the Joe O Show on 670 The Score and the Radio.com app.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Joe O Show, Sports Radio 670 The Score, hanging out till 10 o'clock. We've got Score Rewind at 9. Brad Spielberger from Pro Football Focus will be here to talk Bears and the NFL at 8 o'clock. Sage Rosenfels, a staple on the Dan Bernstein Show, drops by every Tuesday, reviews the film, and tells you what he saw from the quarterback's eye, what he saw in the most recent Bears game. And he did that today with Dan Bernstein, the former quarterback, now an NFL analyst up in the Minnesota area. And he talked about the Bears' win over the Panthers.
Glad I was not in Carolina, though it was a nice Bears win. As an offensive quarterback, as a person that likes good offense, it was not that by Chicago. It hasn't been that much this year by the Chicago Bears. But as Nick said, good enough to win. Definitely good enough to win. I don't come on here to talk about the Bears' defense. Sometimes I'd like to because I did watch – obviously, that game and a lot this year. This Bears defense, before we start talking about the offense, is very good. Like really good. A defense that when you're the starting quarterback and we play Chicago this week and you start watching film, you don't want to play against them. It's not fun. They are at almost, I don't know about record pace, but if you look at some of their statistics, they have more interceptions than touchdown passes given up. That doesn't happen very often. I think they might be the only team in the league that has that stat. They're hard to move the ball against. They're definitely hard to score against. And they are the number one reason why the Bears are 5-1 and leading the NFC North. The offense, on the other hand, it is a struggle from play to play, from drive to drive. They are making the plays, the most important plays at the right time, which is helping them get these wins. They're getting lucky sometimes with some balls that probably should be intercepted and turned over, but they're sort of scrapping it together to get enough to then also rely on that defense and play the complementary football. They're doing just enough to be a part of this 5-1 record.
I want to talk about the Nick Foles interception because when I watched it again, I was mindful of something you've said in the past about quarterbacks, specifically both Kirk Cousins and sort of end of career Eli Manning, where you allow one problem to beget another problem and things tend to spiral out of control. That was the pass blocking on that play was almost non-existent. There's a still shot that's going around Twitter of five Bears linemen standing with four Carolina pass rushers, all quarterback side of them, all past them as the ball is leaving Foles' hand. And he makes an inexplicable throw. He called it a dumb throw. How does that breakdown up front turn into that pass?
Nick Foles plays quarterback with like somebody who talks just a full stream of consciousness, right? He just sort of lets it go and doesn't look at the downside a lot of times. And that is a very valuable asset to have at times, to sort of just let it loose and not overthink things and have sort of a clear stream of consciousness. But sometimes that gets him into trouble. And there was that interception. There was what I would call a hole shot, which is when you have a receiver running down the middle of the field, but also receiver on the outside by the sideline, and you try to fit a ball in there between the safety who is deep and the corner who is playing in that sort of cover two corner spot. He tried to stick a ball into that location, and there was really no reason for it. Sometimes that throw was there. Other times it was not. This definitely, it was not there. So that ball really should have been intercepted as well. When you don't get protection, you tend to sort of throw balls to where they shouldn't go. It's just sort of a natural thing. It's really hard for a quarterback to sort of overcome that. They got to find ways to protect this quarterback. They got to find ways either to get the ball out quicker, whether it's play action more, where you have tight ends and running backs in there blocking as part of the protection. You have fewer guys out then, of course, and Jimmy Graham then is neutralized and the tight ends are neutralized, but they have to find a way to get this quarterback more protection, or else if they're just blocking five guys versus four or five rushers by the opposing team, they're going to be more interceptions because he's going to, get nervous, but he's going to, throw balls up for grabs occasionally. And the more pressure a quarterback has, the more that just generally occurs.
And I guess that's fundamental to be being fair in the criticism of Nagy too, because if you can't block anything up, it's hard to trust anything. And there were those consecutive little cute zero routes to Anthony Miller that essentially function as a supplement to their run game. And to me, that said a lot. That said, I don't trust you to get push up front. We can't pick a butt to run over in this case. So I wonder how much of this, of the play calling and the desultory play calling, it just jumps from this to this, and maybe I'll try this, and maybe I'll try that there doesn't seem to be sequencing or identity. Maybe it's him just crying out, help me. I don't trust anything to get blocked up well.
Well, they have an identity. It's not good.
It's not a good identity.
It's not,
right?
It's not like identity that you want to have. They don't have much of a run game. I saw a little criticism on David Montgomery on Twitter yesterday, and I was a little bit beside myself. Is he Walter Payton? No, he is not Sweetness, okay? But he is a good back. He catches the ball in the backfield. He gets more yards after contact, and I think Bears fans do appreciate that. He gets hit at maybe 2 yards, and somehow power through for a 4, 5, 6, 7 yard gain. He does that regularly. There's not a lot there. The Bears, let's start with the running game. For the most part, they run more inside zone than outside zone, which does rely on basically offensive line push. This is not super challenging for a defense to play against inside zone running teams as far as like gap responsibilities are concerned. They're just coming right at you. The outside zone is where you have to sort of run with the offensive line. And if somebody gets cut off, there's a big gash there as the offensive line sort of runs down the line and the fullback and the tight end and that whole thing. But they run a lot of inside zone, which basically relies on push, which basically relies on there's usually not going to be a lot there. Just sort of the way it goes. It's not conducive to big plays, if that makes sense. Off of that, they don't do a lot of play action off that. Usually they have some luck when they do call it, but it seems like it's about twice a game, maybe three times a game where they actually call a play action that does look like one of their inside zone running plays. So you don't have much of a running game, and then you don't have much of a play action game because of that lack of running game, which then leaves you to throwing the football, straight drop back pass. And you can drop as many plays as you want. So, you know, as every quarterback's coach and offensive coordinator and quarterback, you spend a week and, you know, this is the coverage that they're in, and we got this matchup, we want to do this. And you have this passing game plan. But if you can't protect the quarterback, it doesn't matter what pass plays you have. It doesn't matter at all. You can drop all the beautiful things and try to get guys open. But if you have no protection, you will have no passing game. This Bears offense has no passing plays over 40 yards this year. I don't know if you know that. They're the only team in the NFL that has no passing plays over 40 yards. They cannot push the ball down the field. Is it the quarterback? Is it the receivers? Is the offensive line? Sure. It's the whole thing. It's the whole operation. And it actually just sort of blows me away that this team is 5-1 with this anemic of an offense. And again, it's, you know, I watch it every week. It's not fun to watch. I don't like getting into blaming coaches or blaming players. It is a group effort. All right? I don't think the coaches are getting it done. I don't think the players are getting it done. It is a group effort. But you know, as a former player, when you have really, really struggling offenses, from my history of 12 years in the National Football League, the offenses that struggled the most, in my opinion, were more because of coaches than players. You know, do some teams have better receivers and a better line, a better quarterback than others? Absolutely. But coaches can find ways to score points, to move the ball, to have a functioning quality offense, even with very average players. And I think the Bears have good players. I can't critique the offensive line that well, but I really do think the Bears have some weapons at all the spots you need. I think their quarterbacks, even Trubisky as well, are good enough to win football games and score points in the National Football League. So to me, I would lean it more on the coaching side as the issue with this offense, because it's been like this pretty much the whole time. Even when Nagy first got there and they made that run, and they had, you know, it's been the defense. The defense has carried the water for this football team. It just really has. And Nagy should be very thankful that he, you know, got signed to a team as the head coach where the defense was really good. Imagine if this defense wasn't good. It would, this team would be 0-6 right now. But luckily the defense is good, and that offense just has to do enough at the right time to help be a part of this team that is winning football games.
So let's ask the question that's right in front of us now, the way you set that up. Near the end of the show yesterday, I read an email from an astute listener who made the Brian Billick comparison, where part of a high-flying offense known as an offensive mind takes a job and ends up winning a Super Bowl because of a kick-ass defense and an offense quarterback by Trent Dilfer that just could be good enough, could get out of the way to not hurt
Tony
them.
Banks.
Yep,
Tony
and
Banks
then,
to start.
Yep, that's
Tony
right.
Tony Banks to start that season, by the way. Tony Banks, then Trent Dilfer. But go
correct.
Ahead.
So the question is, from a strategic perspective, when does a coach swallow hard and say, I know we want to do this, and I know I try to solve the Rubik's Cube every time, and I know we look for big gainers, and I'm an offensive mind with my magical play sheet, but maybe less is more. And here we go with this phrase again, dare I use it, game manager, and try to let your defense and your punter and whatever you got to do, you know, it's a hard admission for a coach, an offense, a proud offensive coach to do that. But would the Bears be more likely to win a Super Bowl if they just said, we got to be honest about what this offense can and can't do?
Winning ugly is still winning. And in the National Football League, and really all sports, it really doesn't matter how pretty the wins are as long as they keep coming in, and that's what's going on. It's obvious they're relying on this defense, and that's going to be their cowbell of what they, of how far they get this year. It's going to be because of their defense. Their offense does need to pick it up, though. I understand with Brian Billick and the Ravens and how they won the Super Bowl with that anemic offense, that that was, what, 21 years ago, right? So that happens so rarely. Usually you have to have a nice balance of offense and defense to be successful. This style of offense, by the way, other than in Kansas City, where they have Pat Mahomes and probably the best weapons and maybe some of the best O-line play and coaching in the National Football League, huge aspect of an offense is O-line play, O-line coaching, that whole thing. Andy Reid's specialty. But Philadelphia, they won the Super Bowl with this similar type of offense. They are struggling too. Yeah. This style is not having a ton of success around the league of the other sort of Andy Reid tree coaches right now. Not a lot of quality offense going on. So it would be nice if this team, this offense, started to carry more weight and not rely on the defense. It gets old for defense. I played on a Miami Dolphins team for 4 years down in Miami. We had Ricky Williams on offense. And we had Zach Thomas and Jason Taylor and Junior Seau and Sam Madison and Pat Surtain and Brock Marion. And we were loaded on defense. I think we had 8 Pro Bowlers 1 year. We won a lot of games 17 to 13 or 13 to 7. It was ugly, and it was fine, and our defense is okay with it. But over the course of the year, all those three and out, or all those one first down drives, those will add up and just wear down your defense physically, but also mentally. The mentally to have to go out there every single game and try to basically shut down the other team. And, you know, if you give up 17 points, you very well could lose. That is really, really hard to do, to convince yourself of that. You know, they had Ray Lewis in Baltimore, and Ray was one of those guys. They're not going to get a yard. Like, he convinced everybody. I think they liked the challenge that their offense stunk, and that we're going to go win it despite the offense. We don't really need an offense. We'll win it without an offense completely. Just don't turn the ball over and give up points that way. I mean, to have that mentality is hard to get to, but if the Bears are going to want to go deep in the playoffs this year and have a chance to win a Super Bowl, this defense is going to have to carry a lot of water.
Yep, there is no question about that, and we all hope that the offense can improve as Matt Nagy is copying what Nick Foles is telling everybody. That was awesome, though. Even as someone watches the team week to week and you see they're not scoring points, and at times it feels like nothing is getting better year three of Matt Nagy as a play caller, after seeing Foles, I did believe in him. You see why teammates rally around him. You see it. Time will tell. Time will tell. They've had easy matchups to start, too. That's the scary thing. They haven't faced a ton of great defenses. First two starts for Foles, he did face really good to great defenses. But the other games, they're not scoring enough. They aren't as consistent on offense. Drives aren't long enough. You can't ask the defense to play to this level the entire year. Maybe they will. Maybe it's going to be 2018 again. But that's a big ask, and it's completely unfair. They just need to be average. That's all we're asking for. And if they're average, middle of the road, a lot of these statistical categories, 15, 20, I think a lot of us would be very happy, and they'll continue to win a lot of games. And it won't be a question. And then it'll all be about getting ready for the postseason. Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670 The Score. That was Sage Rosenfels. Every Tuesday on the Dan Bernstein Show, some fantastic stuff. I suggest you listen every single week if you're interested about the Bears quarterback, and you should be, because that is the biggest story involving this football team. Coming up next, Stan Bowman of the Blackhawks talked today. Wasn't to all the media. You probably missed some of this. But my guy, executive producer Jordan Malley, went through an hour conversation with Stan Bowman, and he pulled out some vital stuff that you need to hear about the Blackhawks moving forward. Brad Spielberger from Pro Football Focus will be here at 8 o'clock. Joe Osho, 670 The Score in the Radio.com app.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station. Joe Ostrowski.
The goal is to try to be more transparent with the fans and the media. And
Corey Crawford, a couple of cups in Chicago, but he is gone.
How would you characterize the direction? Is it a retool? Is it a rebuild?
We're going to retool this roster. And We studied the options, and we didn't want to go into an absolute rebuild.
I think we are going to certainly go younger, but that doesn't mean we're going to have just a team full of 22-year-old players.
But we did want to get younger, and we do want to get more athletic.
Joe Ostrowski.
We couldn't live without Joe Ostrowski.
Night 6 to 10.
That being said, I hate Joe Ostrowski.
On 670 The Score.
So what are they doing, Joe? What are they doing?
All right, I'll explain. So Stan Bowman spoke today. I'm going to bring you a little bit of that conversation in just a moment. But I was talking to our executive producer before the show, Jordan Malley, tonight, because he listened to the entire hour-long conversation, the sit-down that Stan Bowman had with the Blackhawks Talk podcast. And how he summed it up for me was, he sounds, why don't you tell everybody, what exactly was your comp that you gave in this Stan Bowman conversation you heard today?
The only thing I texted you back was, this is Gar Forman, circa 2016, summer of 2016.
Okay, it's Gar Forman, circa 2016. So keep that in mind. We'll revisit that thought in just a moment. So here's Stan Bowman sitting down with the Blackhawks Talk podcast of NBC Sports Chicago. In this three-minute chunk, Bowman talks about why they've decided to put more emphasis and focus on developing players and adding depth to the roster. Take a listen.
You know, what we've been trying to do over the last couple of years is to try to incorporate younger players, going back to even with Alex DeBrincat. You know, he came in as a young player and he led our team in goals. And so it's not like it's a brand new direction. I think the difference is we are committed to seeing the process through. And if you break it down, the biggest thing that we need is we need more depth for us to be a team that can ultimately compete for the Stanley Cup. We have some really good pieces right now. So it's not like we're starting from scratch. But I think the key moving forward is for us to invest in young players, give them the opportunity to grow, and they're not going to always nail it right away. I think that's part of the thing that we need to understand with young players. And I guess we can talk about last season, and maybe this will give some context to it. So Kirby, you know, by the end of the year in the playoffs in August, he was a pretty impressive player. But he wasn't that player back in October and November. And, you know, I think there might have been some questions. Why would you keep him around if he wasn't ready to be the player he was? And Jeremy and I and the rest of the organization looked at it as we were investing our time in Kirby because we felt that it would pay off for us down the road. Adam Boqvist is along the same lines. It wasn't that he was necessarily ready in November when he came up, but we're investing time in those players and we're giving them a chance to succeed and fail because we think that by doing that, we're going to get a payoff down the road. Now in Kirby's case, the payoff came pretty quickly. You know, he's a pretty special player to be able to make those strides in a matter of months. I would love to say that all of our young players are going to have that progression, but that's probably not realistic. He's a pretty unique talent to be able to do that. But, you know, when we say giving young players the opportunity, there's going to be some struggles along the way with all of our young players. So some players may need more time in Rockford. Some players may come up and they may have a great month or two and then they struggle and we want to take them out of the lineup for a couple games. And I think to us, that's not necessarily a negative situation. Like last year, Kubalik missed some games, and the process for young players, you know, he's 25, but it's his first year in the NHL, Dominic. And I think he had a great ending to the season. But for us, looking at this is the young players, they need a chance to show where they're at. They need feedback from the coaches. They need to work on parts of their game. They may need to be pulled out and they may need to go to Rockford for more development time. But if that happens, it's not a horrible outcome, because what we want to do is we want to give them the opportunity to find the areas of their game that they're not quite good enough at and work with them to get them to the level because we need to develop more players. We need more depth throughout our lineup to be a team that can beat the top teams.
Yes, obviously. Even myself, the novice hockey guy, knows that. That's Stan Bowman, Blackhawks Talk Podcast, NBC Sports Chicago. Here's a little bit more of Bowman. Okay, it's so strange to me that they are so careful how they word this. Really odd. If you have two eyeballs, actually one eyeball. One eyeball is good. One right in the middle of your forehead. You'll be fine. Was that Goonies? You'll be good. That's all you need. One eyeball, middle of your forehead. You can see what they're doing. You know what they have to do moving forward. Here's the question. Is this a retool or a rebuild, Stan Bowman? Please answer.
How would you characterize the direction? Is it a retool? Is it a rebuild? It seems like when rebuild gets thrown around, you're tearing it down, but it doesn't seem like that's happening here. Is it a little bit of both?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question, Charlie. And I think it is something that when I say the word rebuild, when you say it, when a fan says it, we might not mean the same thing. I think you're right. Probably in the traditional sense, when you say rebuild, you're thinking, let's take all the pieces we have. Let's move them out. Let's kind of bring it back to nothing and then start it back up. That's not a realistic thing really in NHL today. It may happen in other sports, but because of the way our sport is lined up with the salary cap, and that's just not something that really any team would endeavor to do. So there's probably elements of that. I think we are going to certainly go younger, but that doesn't mean we're going to have just a team full of 22-year-old players. There's going to be a combination of veteran players and young players. I think if anything, where we need the veterans, we need to support them more than we have. So like they're still, you know, high-end players, but they don't have the surrounding pieces that they had before. And instead of trying to put more and more and more on their backs, we're actually trying to distribute the load amongst a larger group. We don't have enough of those yet. And I keep coming back to the same point. We need more depth throughout our lineup. But the way to get that is we're going to develop it. Now, it doesn't mean that every player has to be a player that was drafted by the Blackhawks. It could be a young player that we sign as a free agent. It could be through a trade. But I think the opportunity is we need to invest and try to – it does take some time for these players to reach their full potential. Like I said before, it'd be great if everybody has a pretty quick transition. We give them the opportunity, they nail it, and they become impact players. That's not a realistic goal for everybody. And some of the guys that we invest in and we're going to try may not turn out, but we need to invest in a lot of them so that enough of them are going to take the next steps in their career. And that's where we're at right now. You know, I think looking at our team, we have a number of young players and we also have some veteran players. And it doesn't have to be one or the other. It's not just a binary thing where we're looking to just get rid of everybody and have just a team full of early 20s players. That's not really a winning approach either. I think we need to have a combination of the two. And that's why there's a role for veteran players. They know what it takes to win and, you know, they want to win. I think that's the thing. We certainly all have the same end goal. We want to win. That's the reason that I'm doing this. I'm not doing this just to do it. I know what it feels like when your team is the last team standing. And that's something that we all want to get back to. But the path to get there is we're going to rely on the development of our players from within. But that can also involve acquiring young talent. So moves that we make going forward, if we do make trades, we're going to be always looking to try to have the future in mind, not just the present.
All right, one more chunk. Does that sound like Gar Forman a few years back? Here's more of Stan Bowman on the Blackhawks Talk podcast on the conversations, moving on from Corey Crawford and the message that is being sent to players on the future of the franchise.
Part of what I just talked about comes into play here with flexibility. So our goal was to try to go. We did talk to Corey right when our season ended. We did talk to him about a 1-year deal. And if, so for us, it's not so much about whether Corey can play, whether he can play 2 years or not. We eventually need to find the next goaltender of the Blackhawks. Corey's not going to be, was not going to be our goalie for the next 10 years. You know, he's 36 years old and he's, you know, he's at the, toward the end of his career. So it's not that we didn't think Corey could play one or two more seasons. I think it, we made the determination Corey wasn't going to be here for the next 6 or 7 seasons. So at some point you have to find that goaltender. You could find it now. You could find it a year from now. But if you sign to a multi-year contract and next summer or off season, we'll call it next off season, there's a really good young goalie that's available, but you've already allocated your money for Corey for a couple of years. You're not in that market. You're not able to do that. So the flexibility was something that we thought made more sense for where we're at. Like I just said, we haven't had that flexibility for a long time. So we have 3 young goalies that all have showed a lot of promise at the American League level. They've all been all-stars at the American League level. None of them have really had a great opportunity. Certainly Subban has had the most experience of the 3, but never really was given an opportunity to be a number one goalie in the NHL. So we want to give those guys the chance, and we're certainly hopeful that they're going to take the most of it and step forward to prove that they're a number one NHL goalie. But I think the flexibility that this allows us to move in some different directions over the next year is going to be critical. You know, the cap is going to be at 81.5 for 2 seasons at a minimum, potentially 3, 4, or 5 seasons, depending on what happens over the next couple of years. There may not be a lot of cap growth. So I think it's paramount to have that flexibility for a team where we are in our developmental cycle, having more guys on shorter term deals. Then a year from now, we'll have a better idea. So we've got a lot of players that are on shorter deals, and we can go one of which way. If they succeed and we want to extend them, that's great. If it doesn't work for that player, then we can move on and go and find another player. So I think that's something that was important to us, and that's what led us down this path.
Stan, Corey said that really there wasn't much negotiation. So based on what you're saying, do you feel like that like you would have been comfortable giving him 1 year and it was the second term that didn't allow you guys that flexibility?
That was really the discussion, Charlie. It wasn't so much that we don't think Corey's a good goalie. I mean, it was a tough decision to come to, and it was a tough call to make. I mean, Corey's been a huge part of the organization for a long time, and I have so much respect for everything that he's brought to our team. You know, I don't think Corey ever got the fair amount of credit for what he did. But when you look at it, you also have to look at where we are, and the decision was more of a flexibility thing for us. And the term was something that was more problematic than the dollar amount itself.
Stan Bowman on NBC Sports Chicago, the Blackhawks Talk podcast. Some very good stuff. Great job by the fellas getting Bowman to sit down and open up for a little bit for an hour. So Jordan Malley, executive producer, explain why Stan Bowman right there, 2020 Bowman, sounds like 2016 Gar Forman.
I mean, it makes me cringe. I feel bad for Blackhawks fans, and I get that they've won more recently than the Bulls have, but, I mean, Joe, like, retool, not rebuild.
To retool, not rebuild.
I mean, cap flexibility, these are the things that the Bulls talked about prior to signing Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo to run it back one more time with Butler. It's the exact same thing, and maybe Blackhawks fan have more faith than I did when I was a
Bulls fan. Are you worried they're going to do that? Are you worried they're going to just bring in a few veterans, give it one last try instead of going the younger route and adding depth to the roster to compete with the truly good teams?
I'm more disappointed and feel like they're going to waste the rest of Kane's prime, the rest of any of the players that are on their team, Taze's prime. They're going to waste it. They're going to waste it by trying to think about the future and not what they still have right now. And maybe I'm somebody who's looking at this as a 1,000-point view perspective.
You're scarred. The Bulls have scarred you.
I mean, man, though, like, listen to that. Talking about having depth on the roster, it's just, I don't know. It is. I am a scarred Bulls fan.
No, I'm glad you were. Thank you for going through that and bringing some of the best stuff for our audience, because I know that was worthwhile for some people that that may have missed that. It's fascinating to see the direction, and it is moving at a glacial pace as they are slowly making changes at the top of the organization in the Blackhawks org. So it'll be interesting to see how things go moving forward, but they are moving on from some guys that you expected to be here a very, very long time. So there's that. Joe Osho, Sports Radio 670, The Score. Let's get back to the Bears. Big Bears fan, also works at Pro Football Focus. His name is Brad Spielberger. You may have heard him on the show in the past. And he's got some thoughts on your 5-1 Bears. Not all of them are positive. We're going to discuss with Brad next. You've got 670 The Score in the radio.com app.
If we can get our team deeper and have more depth across the board, I think it's going to help us. And of course, health, you know, is going to help us.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.